Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
This week, a broadly diverse group of philanthropists, scientists, educators, and state and local politicos announced that Iowa was 3 years away from seeing its first tropical rainforest springing up in the middle of the soybean and corn fields. And they're excited at the prospect. What's driving this unusual proclamation? You'll have to keep listening to find out when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News. There's good news coming from many sectors that counters some of the news that puts us off a bit. The movement towards creating a sustainable world is really catching on. And possibly no more right now this week than some news that's coming out of central Iowa about the ultimate environmental experience that I'm aware of in the United States. It's a very exciting new project called Earth Park. And I'm very delighted to have as our guest right now the executive director of Earth Park, David Ullman. David, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Well, Sydney, thank you. It's fun to be with you and look forward to your questions and talking about this exciting project we have here in the U.S.
Let's first of all give our listeners a concept of what it is that Earth Park hopes to be.
Well, Earth Park is aimed at a pretty lofty goal, and that is at being an environmental center for the United States. We don't have a project that really has that specific of a mission. Our board mission statement is inspiring generations to learn from the natural world. How do we do that? In person at a very large, complex center that will include about 3.5 to 4 acre enclosed rainforest biome with connections to environmental hotspots globally, anchored in learning with a lot of engaging kiosks, exhibits, and galleries for learners of all ages, and virtually with a very robust internet presence, similar to what you do, hopefully, as good as what you do. But we want to be able to use the information, the connections, some of the curricula that our educators have beginning to come up with, and share that with people all over, regardless of whether or not they're ever able to come to the Midwest and see our project.
This is in Iowa, and of course, I think there's a number of people who are going to say, why Iowa?
Well, that's a fair question. Iowa is certainly not the largest state in our country, but it's a state that celebrates two great values that we have for well over 100 years. This is a state that is a leader in our country in education. Our students always test number one or number two. We're a very literate state. We're also well-traveled. Iowans have the distinction of being a pupil with the highest percentage who have passports, so we like to go elsewhere and see other people's dreams. But we're also centrally located near the intersection of two of our country's busiest interstates, 80 east-west and Interstate 35 north-south. We're going to build this project on a large 15,000-plus acre lake, the largest body of water between the Ozarks and Lake Mille Lac up in northern Minnesota, where you're from. And we're a place that not only is grounded in education, but I'll finish the thought, it's also a place where we're grounded in conservation. We take environmental stewardship quite seriously. And I attribute a lot of that to our agricultural heritage and the fact that we pay attention to soil and water quality. So for all those reasons, plus the fact that our benefactor and our board and our former governor and others who have worked on this project all live here, that's why the project will be built in the state of Iowa.
This follows on a successful project in England that kind of defined the possibilities for a very large-scale environmental center, environmental learning center. Why don't you talk about the Eden Project?
Well, I'm happy to do that, too. We've become, on a personal basis, well acquainted with and friends of the team that planned and brought forth the Eden Project in Cornwall 5 years ago. They're great people. They're tenacious Brits. They're good marketers, but they're also grounded in education. And they, too, have story of celebrating the environment. And I would encourage people to look at that project's website, Eden, E-D-E-N, as in the Garden of Eden, EdenProject.com. And on that, they'll find a wealth of information. Eden is in Cornwall. It's about 5 hours west of London on the isthmus or tip of England that juts out to the Atlantic. It's not easily a place you could get to, but it's well worth the effort. And they've created this spectacularly large biome, about 150 feet tall, big trees, thousands of various plant species, and you are in there, you feel the humidity and the heat, you feel like you're in a real living, breathing rainforest. And about a year ago, they added on an educational center called The Core. Here's what's most impressive, I believe, in addition to the content. In 5 years, they have seen 8 million visitors come to Eden, people from all over the continent, some from the U.S. After your experience, you come away with a whole new appreciation for plants, for nature, for the stewardship that we need to provide, and it celebrates what people can do and the difference that we can make. And they are a team that has given us a lot of good information. We share the same architect, the Grimshaw firm out of London, New York, and they are eager for us to become their U.S. counterpart, and we certainly are looking forward to doing that.
From what I understand, this is going to be a total immersion experience. We're going to talk about the enclosure itself. This is a destination point. You can literally come here and spend time. There's going to be places to stay and a larger landscape. Talk about what the totality of this experience will include.
That's a really good question, and I appreciate you asking that. We are aiming the project at being something that could be a wonderful resource for people, whether they be casual visitors or more purposeful in doing ecotourism and trying to come someplace in the upper Midwest and really learn, whether they're spending half a day or 3 days with the scientists and with the master teachers on site. We will build, again, about a 3.5 to 4 acre biome covered with a Teflon-like material from a German firm called Foiltech. Very interesting design, very iconic, different kind of building, powered by an array of alternative renewable energy sources. We hope indeed that the building itself will teach about efficient design and construction. The overall site that we'll be sitting on is a beautiful wooded tract, mature trees, and it will be next to this large, very large body of water. There will be some green hotels. There'll be nearby a wonderful small community and a lot of other visitor amenities that people will be able to take in. In addition to spending time, there'll be a couple hotels, a water park for kids. So it'll be a fun overall experience. We hope people will want to spend 2 or 3 or 4 days on site.
There's every reason to have fun and learn at the same time.
You know, thank you for saying that, too, because learning fun are not mutually exclusive. In fact, most of the surveys will tell you that there's better retention, better memory when experiential learning is fun. And a lot of science centers, museums, botanical facilities, and others are also aware of that and are trying to freshen up the experience. We certainly want to launch with something that has a great, colorful variety of plant life, some animals, reptiles. We'll have about a 600,000-gallon aquarium, fresh water, recreating the flooded rainforest, and it's all about giving people a variety of exciting experiences. We're also going to load in some high technology and some virtual reality experiences that can put people literally in other places around the planet. We think a lot of people, particularly young ones, will just find a lot of excitement in that.
Most nature centers cater towards schools and family visits, but this really is going to be a family experience. That's a different sort of way to approach environmental learning on a family basis. It's a form of localized ecotourism.
Well, it clearly is, and again, we honor what's gone before, but our architects, Grimshaw, Sir Grimshaw, and others have been very clear to us that we want to respect our visitor, our learners, plural, and not dumb it down. We do want people to have fun, but we don't want to just have a little plaque that they read as they go by on a linear route. We want to have a lot of interactive learning against kiosks and some opportunities for people to make inquiry-based learning possible, and they can spend as much or as little time as they want. The architects are working to come up with multiple routes through the biome, so you don't just start at point A and end at point B, troll along following somebody right in front of you, but we'll be able to cross-cut between the cloud forest, the recreated jungle, and also the flooded Amazon waters experience, and move in and out from a learning core that will have information in it. So it's all aimed at what's known as free choice learning. Give people the right to do what they want to do. And again, if we're smart about it, we have a lot of work to do to map it all, but if we can robustly use the Internet, encourage people to be online with us before and after their experience, you can sort of extend the learning moment. People can be a little better prepped when they come and then hopefully have a great time, then go home and can stay in touch with Earth Park. And their website will be earthpark.org. We should get that out there. And there are already some interesting information up on the net, more to come. But if we do it well and link to other good facilities like what you've talked about, we can have a real impact for learners all over and help propel interest in the environment and in sustainable living.
You've got one of the greatest jobs in the world right now, and that is to dream about what is possible in terms of environmental learning. And you get to, you know, start from the ground up here, find the best, and then put it inside. So give us, at this point, I'm sure you have some really terrific visions of what that experience will be like. Give us some highlights.
Well, we're blessed to have good people on this team. Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa helped a few years ago with funding to put together an education design team. And we got some of the smart people in the ranks of education, formal education, K-12, public and private, and also higher ed, not only from Iowa but from around the country, to dream, to do some charrettes and think about content and design and come up with what we could do. And more recently, Senator Grassley from Iowa has helped with some assistance from the Department of Energy as well. They're very interested in, again, the alternative and renewable energy technology sources that can be applied to fuel the building, to run it, and the life support systems on the inside. Back on the learning front, we hope to, as I said, have learners of all ages. We'll probably see about 100,000 young people through on an annual basis. That's quite a bit, actually. We're learning from, again, what they're doing at the Eaton Center in the UK. One of the things, Sydney, that I think really is exciting is that there is some specific thinking oriented to teachers. If we lose a lot of teachers in society, with people who go to school, get an education major, teach for 3 to 5 years, and check out because of relatively low pay or discipline issues, whatever, in the classroom, we unfortunately lose a lot of our best teachers at a relatively young age. The thought here would be that if we could create a really exciting 21st century environmentally themed learning center where these young teachers could come maybe 5 years into their career, recharge their battery, hang with other teachers, work with master teachers, and rejuvenate themselves and remind themselves of why they get into teaching in the first place, and then send them out armed with great new information, contacts. Maybe we keep some in the profession, particularly in science and in environmental science, as the demand for more information on those fronts grows. We think if we just could do that, in addition to obviously building, opening, and running this well, we would have made a great contribution.
Nothing works better for teachers than to get into a situation like that where suddenly their eyes are open to all sorts of new opportunities. I know I've been through that many times myself. And you think you got a pretty good handle on something, and then someone says, here, why don't you try this? Why don't you try mapping the area? And just all sorts of different techniques that bring excitement to learning. And that's critical for a successful learning back in the classroom. That's a great tie-in.
Well, it all starts with good teaching, and we're fortunate in this country that we have thousands of great teachers. Unfortunately, as the boomers age, you and I among them, in the decade of the teens, we're going to lose some of the very best teachers in this country. We've got to recruit a new core of people and then keep them in the profession and keep them excited about teaching for decades to come. You're absolutely right. You know, the environment is only going to become more important, more information as it's threatened will be out there, and if we can't be a place that helps enable the transfer of information, give people those kinds of touch points, then again, we'll be helping. And we want to learn from a lot of others, and we're getting a lot of good suggestions, good ideas from people all the time, and we're grateful for those.
This will be a recreation of a rainforest environment, so that when you walk in from, it's a 20 below zero outside on a February, and you walk in, that's going to be kind of nice all by itself.
Well,
paradise in Iowa. That's interesting.
It may be 20 below, the Canadian border, but we rarely get that cold here. We may have a handful of days at zero or slightly below zero. But the wintertime at Eden, again in the UK, they do very well over there for that very reason. People like the respite.
Oh yeah.
I can just it'll be fun all four of our distinct seasons, we believe.
Having lived in Minnesota, I can just imagine these people in the parkas and the snow boots coming in and ripping them off and just wanting to be there for a relaxation.
So let me build a big coat room, won't we?
You're going to have a huge coat room. It'll actually be a parka room. Yeah.
Right.
Now, you're going to have a 600,000-gallon aquarium. Configure that for me so that the people have a picture of that in their mind.
We don't expect to look like the Shedd Aquarium, if I could use that as an example, or more recently, the spectacular new aquarium in Atlanta, Georgia, which is about close to 5 million gallons, gargantuan in size. We will not just have tanks. There may be some of those, but mostly what we want to do is mimic what happens in the real rainforest with the incredible amount of rain that they get in the rainforest. You see the rise and fall of the water table down there. In some parts of the rainforest, they get 400 inches of rain. And we took some from our science and design team to Brazil just last January, about 9 months ago. And we were in small boats every day on the Amazon and its tributaries. And the scale, the story of the flooded rainforest, the story of water in that ecosystem is integral. It's why it's called the rainforest. If we can capture a slice of that and tell that in a compelling way, it will be fun. And so it won't be your classic aquarium where you'll just be staring at a 12-foot high tank, but it will be integrated with the trees. There will be fish, some reptiles, and amphibians around, and it should be a fun experience.
Now, are you also going to have mammals free roaming and that type of thing?
Well, it's under consideration. There are some who are championing that. If you want to have a true ecosystem, obviously that would be part of it. There are cost issues involved there and some visitor issues that need to be taken into account, setbacks, and not only for the safety of our guests, but also for the safety of the animals. And I think we'll see that in a limited way. Certainly we'll see a lot of very colorful birds. But I don't know that we'll see a lot of animals. At the Eden Project, you see zero. They have birds in there, but they don't really have any other species.
And also, virtual reality. This is something I've always been fascinated by. I've always had a dream of doing a traveling tour where a person could go into a room and dial in an environment anywhere in the world and do surround visuals, sounds, and a sense of even humidity and different things. What's your dream for? I realize a lot of this, by the way, is in the planning stages, and you're very lucky. And I don't want to have you. Nothing that we're saying here is set in concrete, okay? Because you're in a planning stage here. But what kind of vision are you looking at for your virtual reality chamber? A cell, a theater, an auditorium? What are you looking at there?
Well, we'd like to go north of what we see today, which is the IMAX experience. And those are terrific. We'd like to use a real digital format. We'd like to surround people. We'd like to have it be a little more intimate. We've got good people at Iowa State University up in Ames, where there's been some real excellent work for the last several years on virtual reality fictions, and others who are giving us good counsel. You said it well. Well, a lot of that's still under investigation. There are budget implications, to be sure. say over the next year, a lot of that will be thought through much more than it is today. But we've raised the bar on ourselves to see if we can't create an experience like that in addition to what we have in the biome.
You've got some great partners who've helped launch this. I believe you're going to start groundbreaking in 2007. So give us a sense of who some of the principals are that have really helped to make this happen. You've already mentioned some. And then also, what are we looking forward to in terms of a timeline?
Well, good. We do have good partners, and you discover quickly when you work on something like this with a big vision, and then your team is charged with delivering that, that you... You've got to get a lot of help. Partnering counts for quite a bit, public sector and private. On the public side, again, good help from a number of educational institutions and individuals. The U.S. Department of Energy has been good. We are working with some firms in corporate America, many of which are excited about sustainability and retooling their own companies to be more environmentally responsible, and understanding also where the market is going, and that people expect that from those that they do business with. We've, in the last few months, we've signed up the Siemens Corporation, the German company, as our technology partner. We've had multiple meetings with them, more recently two team meetings where each side's had six or seven people around the table mapping out the energy systems for the project. And so Siemens is a great firm. Long heritage over on the continent, not as well known in the U.S., but they're very good people committed to responsible environmental action, and we're elated that they're on this team. There are other companies with whom we're talking as well, and I hope soon to be able to share their names with you as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, groundbreaking 2007, and how long do you expect this?
Yes, you asked about the timetable, and I hopped over that. The groundbreak will be, we hope, roughly mid-year next year. And it's about a two and a half to three year build and some time to populate the biome. So we're looking at best case probably mid-2010 as an opening. And we hope some pre-opening opportunities. And if I could not unduly talk about Eden, but again, I think it's helpful to do that because if people can understand what goes on at Eden, they'll have a better sense of what we are going to do. They opened up that project early. In the summer of 2000, before it was completed, and they actually had people pay about £5, which at the time was about $8, to tour what in effect was a construction site.
That would be fun.
It was fun, and it taught people what was coming. It showed them the scale of the project, and it invested them in the story and got them emotionally involved. So guess what? When they cut the ribbon and opened the doors, they all came back.
Oh, I'd be there any number of times.
Again, they've taught us well, and if we can generate that kind of interest here in the U.S., in the heartland, and again, with the Internet programs like yours, we can be talking to people in Portland, Maine or Portland, Oregon, and we really do believe that once this is open, people will find their way here. We've actually had some people in corporate America tell us that they're glad that we are in the heartland, that we're in the Midwest, that we're not on either coast, so that people can get here, and we're not jammed into a dense urban setting. We've got elbow room. We've got quiet. We've got beauty. We've got this incredible body of water, very placid, bucolic, special place, and a place to grow over time, too, in the years ahead.
People used to head to the cities to have a great time because there was a lot going on in the cities. Now the cities have become... It's a bit challenging. It's hard to find a place to park. It's noisy. It's busy. Traffic is stuck. So guess what? People are heading out to the country.
You're exactly right. I think for our story, for what we're trying to share with people, it works best for us to be outside of that kind of congested space and in a place where people can look up and see the stars, look out and see the great sunsets, and then go inside in this biome and take up, wander and be full of wonder, and I think we've got a great location in Pella, Iowa.
Now, tell me where that is. I want to know where that is so I can say in 2010 I'm going to plan a visit to Pella, Iowa.
Pella is a beautiful community of about 11,000 people. It's about 40 minutes southeast of Des Moines, which is the state capital of Iowa, and it's where Interstate 80 and Interstate 35 intersect. So we're just 40 minutes from that intersection, less actually from Interstate 80, due south of Interstate 80. It's a town with a proud Dutch heritage, a lot of windmills, and we're really having a lot of fun as we look at the possibility of using wind energy on site, or maybe connected to some of the big wind farms in north central northwest Iowa. They've got these restored 19th century windmills. We may drop a couple of 21st century wind turbines right there next to the lake. That's just to add a little irony to everything, but we couldn't have a better community. Wonderful people, very entrepreneurial, real excited about sustainability, and they're just great hosts. That site is only about a week and a half old. We just picked it. We had 16 communities in our state that at one time or another expressed some interest in hosting the project. We had a very deliberate site process that took us to 12, 7, and 4, and finally to this one.
Well, I'm excited about being able to announce Pella as the site for the new Earth Park that is going to start groundbreaking in 2007 and take 3 years or so to put together, 2010. Great to know about this happening right now. It's an exciting opportunity. You and I will keep in touch, and we'll let the world know about Earth Park. David Ullman, the executive director of the Emerging Earth Park. One more time, where can people go to find out information about Earth Park?
First, Sydney, my thanks again to you for your interest and for the time in talking today, giving us the opportunity to share with people, your friends, people who are, care about these matters. Earthpark.org is the domain, and we would welcome people looking into that. They can find quite a bit of information about the plans for Earth Park, what will be inside and outside. We invite you and them to stay in touch with us as we go about the next few years of planning, designing, and building. That's going to be a very special time. And then once open, we'd love to see people come on here.
Well, David Ullman, thanks so much for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News.
You're welcome.
All these great ideas begin with a belief in possibilities. Then comes spreading the word, then leadership and commitment. That's the formula that has led one Southern California city's claim to being a model of what can be done when these factors take over. Yes, most of the real change is being born in the towns and cities across America. Stay tuned for a talk with a mayor who is definitely tuned in. She's coming up following this short break.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.